Thanks for joining me on A Wonderful World today. I'm David, and I'm glad that you are with me, and I'm looking forward to our discussion today. I'm recording this on July 4th, and so happy after Independence Day to you if you're in the United States, and so glad that you are. We were able to celebrate that independence this week and have those things. Look forward to a little bit of a picnic later. I know that everything has been turned upside down by the coronavirus, so I hope you're safe and I hope you're well. I heard somebody say the other day, whenever they say, what was the expression? Hindsight is 2020. We'll always remember this. Hindsight is 2020. This year, hopefully, will teach us a lot of lessons and we'll learn a lot. But it has been good to be able to connect with you. And thanks for just being a part of Wonderful World. If you want to be a greater part, you can go to patreon.com/life180 and see some different ways you can support the work we're doing here. And as in July, we will be moving some things ahead. As a matter of fact, I hope to announce at the end of the month a seminar, which you could be a part of and you can get a link to. And so I'll let you know more about that hopefully next week. But thanks for just being a part of what we're doing. Well, if you clicked on the link, you saw the title. And when you saw the title, you saw that we're talking about abortion. It is a hot button issue, always has been. But today what I want to do is I want to give you some statistics and facts and show you that it's not as simple as we think it is. There has been a movement for years to overturn Roe versus Wade. And the idea is if we overturn the Roe versus Wade decision, the 1973 Supreme Court decision, if we overturn that decision that legalized abortion, then everything will be better. And that's just not true. It's just not true. And the reason it's not true is because we're not dealing with the real issues. We're not dealing with the problems. We're not dealing with the systemic problems that lead abortion, that fund abortion, that cause most people to have an abortion. And so today I want to share some statistics with you, and then I want to give you some real practical ways to understand this. Most of the statistics I'll share with you today from the CDC, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and these are numbers that are reported to them. There's another group called the Guttmacher Institute. I'll talk about them a little bit too. Their numbers are usually higher, and the reason they're higher because they do surveys to abortion providers and not just get the reports. And so there may be a good middle ground between the two, but I'm going to share with you the CDC statistics today just because there's enough documentation and really better documentation for that instead of just surveys. But and by the way, the CDC, you see a drop in between 1997 and 98 because they went from 52 reporting stations to 47, so that changed to some degree, but the statistics still ring true. So if I were to ask you which is higher, the number of abortions today in 2020, but I'm going to actually give you statistics through 2016, okay, on these, which would be higher, the statistics there or the statistics of abortion in 1972, the year before the Roe versus Wade decision? You would automatically go with now. Or 2016. But the truth is, although the number of reported abortions is slightly higher now than it was in 1972, the number of abortions per 1,000 women is actually less. And the number of abortions per 1,000 live births is almost the exact same. So the legalizing of abortion didn't really change the numbers, hasn't really changed the numbers over that time. Now, we have a time period between 1980 to about 1991 where the numbers were just off the charts, and I'll share that with you. But once again, I'll show you why politics can't fix that. So the number in 1972 was almost 587,000 abortions. All these numbers are outrageous. I get that. And when I talk about overturning Roe versus Wade, some of you are going like, why would not we not overturn Roe versus Wade? We have a moral obligation. I agree with that. I totally agree. And I agree with you in the sense that as a nation, we are morally obligated to overturn Roe versus Wade because God is not pleased with the taking of life. one of the commandments that everybody knows is thou shalt not kill. And every single life is precious to God. I'm about to read you some numbers, and I'm going to say 587,000. I'm going to say at one point 1.4 million. Those aren't just numbers, though. They're lives. They're lives. And that ought to break our heart, and that ought to bring us to the moral obligation. But I want you to see that there's some systemic issues that are leading to that. But what we're trying to do is to deal with the legal, is it legal or not legal, instead of deal with the problems. Instead of dealing with the problems. The high numbers for years, 1980, you had 25 abortions for every 1,000 women aged 15 to 44. So 25 out of every 1,000 women aged 15 to 44 had an abortion. In 1984, for every 1,000 live births, there were 364 abortions. That was the high over history. 364 abortions for every 1,000 live births. Isn't that mind-blowing? 1980 was the top number the CDC reported in abortions. 1,429,247 abortions that year. Now, to show you that politics is not the answer, from 1981 to 1992, we had Republican presidents. And yet, if you look at the statistics from 1981 to 1992, is the highest numbers of abortions we've had in the history of our nation. It never, let's see, I'm going to say that. It dropped below 1.3 million during that time once. And that was in 1983. It was 1,268,987. A Republican can't fix this. A Democrat can't fix this, because it is not a political football that we keep throwing around that somebody can fix. There's a larger number to this. And that is why we need to see that we've got to do more than just deal with overturning one thing, thinking that's going to fix things. So let's deal with the systemic problems. So what I want to do is share with you statistics and show you how the system of our world is leading to this, and show you how we have to get to the heart of people and not just simply the politics of people or the pocketbooks of people, because don't tell me on either side, on both sides of that, there's not money involved. There's one group that's pouring billions of dollars into the abortion industry trying to keep it up. There's another group that is pouring billions of dollars into the abortion or into the political side trying to make it illegal. But we think that's going to fix it, and it's not. The president can't fix it, a politician can't fix it, and a judge can't fix it. Oh, well, we just need conservative justices, and they'll overturn it. We just saw Chief Justice Roberts made a decision this past week. He was supposed to be one of the quote-unquote conservative justices, and he made a decision that kept abortion legal and overturned something that was going to make it illegal in a certain way, and I think in Louisiana. So they can't fix this. You've got to understand this. God has to fix the heart of people, and when God works in the heart of people, it's going to work out in other areas. So few statistics from the Guttmacher Institute that I think are interesting that show us some answers. I already gave you a little bit of comparison statistics, but this was abortion rate in 2017 was 13.5. That was down from 14.6 in 2014. As a matter of fact, there were 16.3 abortions in 1973 for every 1,000 women. So the number has dropped, actually. But let's talk about this. And this is where we got to get to the heart of people. In 2014, abortion rates, about 1 in 4 women, actually 24% of women, will have an abortion by age 45. I want to let that sink in. 24%, one out of every 4 women. So 1 out of every 4 women you meet at the store, 1 out of every 4 women that you meet at the PTA meeting, but I'm going to go further because I'm going to show you this in a minute, and maybe most likely 1 out of every 4 women that are at church have had an abortion. Now, why do I share that with you? It's because sometimes as the church, we demonize and we rip people apart about abortion, and we have people sitting in our pews that feel guilt and shame, and we've just called them everything but a demon, and we've called them murderers, we called them everything else from the pulpit, and they're sitting there thinking, man, if this person can't forgive me, then how can God forgive me? And they really have a ton of questions, and they're not willing to share their story to help somebody else. And we don't do that in a lot of other areas, but we do it on this subject. And there are people that need help, that need counseling, that need to share their story and would be instrumental in turning things around. But because of the shame that we have beat people up with, they don't know how to deal with it. And so there's a systemic problem within the church. So let me stick with the church for just a second. Because the church talks like this is a world problem. It's everybody out there. 2014, in these surveys, in these statistics, 17% of the abortion patients identified themselves as mainline Protestant. 13% identified as evangelical. 24% as Catholic. Now, if you can do the math real quick, that's 54% of the people say they are either mainline Protestant, evangelical, or Catholic. The groups of people that stand against abortion more than any other group would be the mainline Protestants, the evangelical, especially the evangelical and the Catholic. And yet 54% of those having an abortion identified themselves as that. Now, are some of them just filling out a form? I get that. But there's some relation there. There's some correlation. 38% reported no religious affiliation and 8% reported another affiliation. But 54% are the ones that, and so we have to understand that we're having to minister to people who have been through this. And we've got to give them a voice to say, this is what happened in my life and this is what came. And say, you know what? Just like every other thing that you've committed, God is a forgiving and a gracious and a good God, and He wants to give you hope. And don't spend the rest of your life living in shame over this. Instead, live in freedom in Christ and share your story and watch what God can do. Man, I'm just so passionate about that. I hope you get that. More than half of U.S. abortion patients in 2014 were in their 20s. As a matter of fact, from age 20 to 29, the statistic is 61%. 61% of abortions were women aged 20 to 29. So who's our target audience? It's got to be these people, aged 20 to 29. And even younger, I understand. But here's what we do. We have a lot of good ministry sometimes for kids and then youth. And then all of a sudden they get college age and we kind of let them drop off the scene. And we'll pick them up again when they're 30 and have a couple kids. But here's the issue. From age 20 to 29 is when they desperately need somebody to minister to them. The young ladies need women that are pouring into their lives. But here's what happens when they go to church. There's a 50, 60, 70-year-old man railing on abortion from the pulpit and railing on everything. And they're sitting there going, you don't relate to me. You don't understand the things that I feel or go through. And so they want somebody to talk to and they don't feel like they have that connection. And so we need to reach into that group of people. And by the way, we don't just reach into the group of women, we reach into the group of men. Because these women are not getting pregnant on their own. We all understand that, right? There's a man involved. As a matter of fact, one of the statistics on the Guttmacher, 94% of abortion patients identified as heterosexual. Well, yeah. That makes sense. So there's a man involved. But we just ignore the man in all this and we put all this on the woman. We've got to deal with that. It's not and it goes across racial lines. White patients accounted for 39% of abortions. White. 28% were black, 25% were Hispanic, and 9% made up other races and ethnicities. So 39% white, 28% black. 25, you know, it's across every group of people. One of the systemic issues is something that the church doesn't deal with well. A lot of people are trying to. But listen to this. Some 75% of abortion patients in 2014, 75%, get that number, were poor. They were living at or below the poverty level. At or below the poverty level. So one of the issues of abortion is poverty. But we're going to target, we're going to spend, oh man, come on. We're going to spend, I'm really riled up on this. We're going to spend millions and billions of dollars to overturn Roe versus Wade when poverty, 75% of abortion patients are in the poverty. And they feel like, I can't bring another child into this world. I can't afford to feed myself. I can't afford to feed the kids I do have. And yes, there is a problem of a fatherless home. Father's in prison, and it's just this cycle. And so we have to deal with our prison system. We have to deal with the poverty. All the things. And by the way, this is exactly what Jesus was saying when he said in Matthew 25, the sheep, if you're hungry, you feed them. If they're thirsty, you give them drink. If they're in prison, you go visit them. If they're sick, it's over and over again. This is what Jesus was calling the church to. Jesus was not calling the church to end abortion. Jesus is calling the church to reach the hearts of people. And in reaching the hearts of people, we have to reach into issues like poverty, and issues like fatherlessness, and issues like men just ignoring their responsibilities, and over again. And also issues of forgiveness. If people do not know there is forgiveness, they don't care. So this is a heavy and weighty issue. But it's something we must tackle as the church. In 2014, 65% of abortion patients traveled less than 25 miles one way to obtain care. Now, why do I share that statistic with you? Because it's close to home. 65% of abortion patients traveled less than 25 miles. So we got to work in our community. We have to be active in our communities. So there's some long-term effects from this. The abortion rate is dropping, and that's a good thing. And I'll say a little bit of why that is later. But at the same time, there's a report from the U.S. News and World Report that the number of babies born, and this is from May 20, 2020, Gabby Galvin is the writer. The number of babies born in the U.S. hit the lowest level in more than three decades in 2019, continuing a five-year downward trend. American women, for example, are now projected to have about 1.71 children over their lifetime. That's down 1% from 2018 and below the rate of 2.1 needed to exactly replace a generation. So women are having less babies, even though while the abortion rate is dropping, the birth rate is dropping too. And I understand there's women that are getting married later in life. As a matter of fact, birth rates fell for women in their 20s and 30s and 19, but rose for women in their early 40s. So women are having babies later in life than they used to. But in all, the U.S. saw nearly 3.75 million births last year, which was down 1% from 2018, lowest since 1985. Births fell among women of most races, though they rose 3% for women who were Native Hawaiian or Pacific Islander. Not sure. Births remain largely level for Hispanic women. I'm sharing this with you because I'm trying to get you to see that we have generational issues. So we have to get this out of just the political and legal realm. If we just let it stay in the political and legal realm, we will throw all kinds of money, we will throw all kinds of reports, we will do all this stuff, but we will not fix the problem. So the church has to step up. So the first thing the church has to do, I believe this with all my heart, because when we're talking 1 in 4 women, we have to help women overcome that stigma of shame in the past, like it can't be forgiven, and let them deal with that, their abortion, so they can speak out. That's the first area we need to start. And so help women see that there is a good and a forgiving and a gracious God. We need to help men to understand that there is a God who, you know, requires them to take responsibility. I'll talk about that in a minute. But let's deal with those women first who are dealing with this deep shame They're sitting in church pews. They're sitting in PTA meetings. They're at ball games. They're at all the different things, and yet there's something in their mind and their heart that just can't forgive and let go. And let them realize that we have a forgiving and a loving God who says, yes, I am bigger than that, and I can help you in ways that you can't even imagine, and I can show you love like you've never been shown love before, and I want to use you to tell your story to change somebody else's life. That's awesome. That's the God that we serve, and that's the God that loves us completely and entirely. The second thing the church has to do is to hold men responsible and accountable. This is not, every statistic I read to you, everyone talks about women, 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 women. But if there's one in four women, see, I could give it further to you, by the way. If one in four women have had abortions, what about the man who's impregnated two women that have had abortions? So those numbers, see, the numbers could be crazy for men. And we need to hold men responsible and accountable for their actions. For their actions of sex outside of marriage and breaking their vows and or not making the vows that they need to make and just expecting the woman to live with them, and just when he doesn't want them anymore, he can walk away from that. I believe one of the things we hold them responsible for too and accountable for is their thoughts. One of the most damaging things to this issue is pornography and the culture of pornography among our men. Now, why do I bring that subject up? It is because pornography says that you can have this, these sexual thoughts, and commit these sexual actions, and there's no responsibility. And that's what pornography teaches. It's sex without responsibility. And so what happens? In real life, a man has sex, and now I'm done. I'm no longer responsible. Well, I'm pregnant. Well, that's not my problem. It's not my body. It's your body. And by the way, that's one of the big mantras among abortion-minded people. Hey, it's my body. Well, it is your body, and we get the fact that it's your body, but you got to understand something else. You have responsibility for what's in your body. But that man has responsibility for what's in her body, too. And so we're losing responsibility in this culture. And so nobody wants to take responsibility. Nobody wants to deal with this, and so they just... And we've got to hold men responsible and accountable for this. And we've got to start discipling men in responsibility. Now, that starts very, very young, because most men that get into pornography get into it. It used to be about age 12 or 13. They're saying it's even younger now. Sometimes 8 and 9 years old, where young boys are getting into pornography and it's becoming part of their life, and it's teaching them sex without responsibility. And if you don't get anything else today as a man, get that. Sex always has responsibility attached to it. Sex always has accountability attached to it. And so this is incredibly, incredibly important that you understand that. And so we have to hold men responsible within the church. We have to show them what Scripture says about being a man and about being responsible for his home and loving their wife. This is just paramount. Sex outside of marriage is thou shalt not commit adultery is fornication. No, it doesn't, shouldn't happen. But the other thing we can do as the church is we can start supporting groups that are on the front lines with this. So I'll give a shout out to a couple of groups in our community. We have a crisis pregnancy center. They don't call themselves that. It's called Skylark, a sexual health and wellness clinic. Skylark is run by a great group of volunteers and a man named Patrick Eads. Patrick is an awesome, awesome guy. And they work toward giving these women an option, the option of keeping their child. Coming in and showing them that they are loved, that they are cared for. Most of these women come in by themselves. The man doesn't come in. Every once in a while, the man comes in. But they come in by themselves. They're not sure if they're pregnant, or they know they're pregnant. They're not sure what to do. They don't know what the next steps are. And Skylark and many other organizations like them take women and they give them free sonograms, and they show them what the baby, they show them how far along they are. They give them all kinds of resources. And by the way, they don't just give them resources at that moment. They help them all the way through the process of having a child, and then even beyond, sometimes a year or two or beyond, helping them. Because as we said, 75% of them are at the poverty level. So they don't have resources. And so they're giving them diapers and so many things. And so the church can partner and should be partnering with groups like this to help them. And I get to go to a banquet every year that we're fundraising. And so you can hear the stories, and it just inspires you to keep growing and keep helping and keep working. And so we find a group like that in your area. If you're not in our area, obviously, find a group like that in your area. Sometimes they'll be under the name of CareNet or something like that. But you can look up things like Crisis Pregnancy Center. You can maybe contact your church or a local church and say, hey, do we know anybody like that in our area? And partner with them. But the other thing we can do is once those children are born, we say we're pro-life, but does that mean we're pro-life until they're born and then we kind of leave them after that? No. What happens, once again, is many times maybe some of these parents can't take care of the kids, and so maybe they have multiple children or they can't take care of the one they have, and they end up in the foster system. And the foster system gets overwhelmed. The Department of Family and Children's Services gets overwhelmed. So the church needs to be doing the work there. And so there's, once again, a group in our area called Hope 1312 Collective. Look them up. Tremendous. Allie does a tremendous job. Allie Christensen does a tremendous job with that. And they partner with people because many times those kids are pulled out of homes because they, little things. Maybe they don't have a car that runs and they can't get to appointments. It could be that they don't have enough sleeping quarters. They don't have enough beds in the house. They don't have car seats. There's so many little things that people can do to actually help and to say, let me partner with this family and find out what your needs are. And when we help you with your needs, then the child can stay at the home because the parent wants them. The parent doesn't want to just send them off into this. The parent wants them, and it's better for the child to be in their home with their mom and with their dad. And so Hope 1312 Collective does that with people. They give these children opportunities to stay in the home, and they work with parents, and they work with DFACs and others to make this possible. So find a group like that. And then there's adoption agencies, Christian adoption agencies, and where you're trying to take children who don't have. There's a lot of people that can't have children, and some of you, as you listen to this, you can't have children, and hearing these numbers just crushes you because, oh, if you could just have one of these children. And we've got to figure out a way to make the adoption process better and more equitable and more helpful to the child. And to get them in loving, good homes where there's parents that are just, there are people waiting to be parents and want so much to do that. There are answers. But the answer's not going to be found on a ballot. The answer's not going to be found in a courtroom. The answer is going to be found in Christ, and Christ has chosen to work through his church. So I just want to challenge you today to start looking at things a little different. Look at this issue on a bigger scale. Yes, it matters how you vote. I get that. But it matters how you pray. It matters how you work. His kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. We should be working right now for his kingdom to be transformative right here. So, hey, this has been a heavy, heavy episode. I get that. I understand, but I don't know how much stronger I can say to you, come on, church, be the church. Be the church. Life matters to God. He forms that child in the womb. He knits them together. They're fearfully and wonderfully made. It doesn't matter. None of that matters. You see, I love the song, Wonderful World. And he says, I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. Oh, there's nothing. I've had the privilege of having four children and my wife giving birth to those four kids, and I've been there for all four of them and hear that baby cry and I know there's life. There's nothing more powerful. And that's the option we want every mother to know, is that powerful, beautiful cry of life. Because that's precious to God. He formed them. And he looks at them and says, you're fearfully and wonderfully made, just like I wanted you to be. And hey, if you're listening to this, and I would encourage you, people share this with people that you may know that are in this. If you're listening to this and you're considering what to do, there are options, definitely options. You having that child is option number one, and that is the most important. But then there's other options after that. There's people that will help you. We want you to know that your life is precious, and that child's life is precious, and make it count. I'm just thankful today that you joined me. I want to encourage you. Hey, keep moving. Keep moving forward. And watch everything that God's going to do. God bless. Thanks for being a part of Wonderful World. And it is a wonderful world today.